Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we'll go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football!
Yeah!
Memorabilia on the Gridiron Greats Publisher and Broadcasting Network. In conjunction with Swick Enterprises. And we're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. And I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine. And I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 140-plus years football history and memorabilia, and you find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host. He is a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian, specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Larg. He hails from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show this evening.
Captain, pleasure to be here as always, sir. You had a little pep in your step during your football. It's good.
We are back again in our September time frame. We're going to be doing a couple of podcasts this month. Football season is in full swing. I was commenting to you prior to the show. I had a chance to see your Seahawks with an injured Pete Carroll on the sideline. watching them lose at home, apparently for the first time in almost 10 years, to the New Orleans Saints. So, interesting to see.
They didn't look so good. They didn't look so good, Bob. That's for sure. You know? Yeah.
Very,
I guess even Michael Jordan lost games from time to time.
I even found out how Pete hurt his nose. I guess he got hit with a ball. So it added even more drama to the sideline, watching him chew his gum and pace back and forth. With the Band-Aid on
stitches
his nose.
Yeah. You could see stitches.
It just added to the drama.
You went a step further than I did, Bob, because I didn't even bother looking it up.
It added to the drama on any given Thursday, Sunday, or Monday. Anything can happen in the
Indeed,
NFL.
Yeah.
So I'm going to lead off our show tonight with some correspondence I received from a younger reader, gentleman in his 30s. He asked that his name not be used. I respect that from anybody. And I notice how younger collectors don't like publicity as compared to us older collectors, but in any event, he said to me in his correspondence, which was kind of interesting, he says, I know you really don't like graded cards, but I'm going to tell you why I like mine graded. And he's also collecting newer cards, which that's fine with me. I don't have a problem with it. And he's saying I try to find cards of his favorite team. He's a big Cowboys collector. And I'm sorry, not Cowboys, Texans, Houston Texans collector. And gave me his background, was from Houston, yada, yada, yada. And he says, I collect basically any card that's graded perfect by, now get this, Beckett grading, not PSA, not SGC. Because he likes the way Beckett grades. He likes his newer cards. And then he says, I got a collection of about 40 cards right now. He said, I'm very particular, so on and so forth. So I wrote him back, and I just said, well, I think that's great, and I'd like to feature you one day as our super collector, yada, yada, yada. And I do understand his, you know, his thoughts as far as graded cards are concerned, that he feels that he's getting a legitimate card that is legitimately graded to be the best that there is for that card. He also realizes there's more than, you know, a lot of these cards have multiple, you know, they're maybe printed in the thousands. He may have a few inserts, special inserts that are only, you know, 100 of them are printed, so on and so forth. But he feels very comfortable collecting that way. And I said, well, that's good. That's fine. If you, that's your niche, there's nothing wrong with it.
Collect what you want.
And then I throw out, you know, you're a Texan fan. When you go to a game, make sure you buy a program, keep your ticket stub, pick up a media guide every year. There's a lot of peripheral stuff to collect. And I said, learn more as much as you can. So he said he wasn't really at that level of collecting it, but he says maybe down the road he will, so on and so forth. So I find two things that I'm comfortable with. Number one, there's hope for the hobby because I see a young person collecting his favorite team and the ball teams, a team that's not overly collected. But again, if you're from Houston, you know, you'd probably want to collect the Oilers and collect the Texans. And I did suggest to him, why don't he start collecting some Oiler cards, so on and so forth. I didn't get a response on that. But, and again, he probably doesn't know much about it, but, you know, it's a good research project. Go back and learn and see where the team came from, so on and so forth. So very interesting.
Yeah, it's a newer team. It's the Texans.
Yeah.
It's not like he's, you know, so a young person who loves a newer team. That's awesome. I agree with you. That's good for the hobby. It's good for the sport.
And, you know, I look at yourself, too. You know, I know I got quite a few years on you. You grew up with the Seahawks, and that's pretty cool. And I still remember a good friend of mine, you know, locally here. His favorite team became the Tampa Bay Bucks back in 1976. And I was always amazed by it. And he says, I'm just tired of, at that time, which is kind of funny, tired of the losing of the Jets all the time. So he said, I want to, you know, start with a new team, start fresh. And he's been a Bucks fan ever since. So it's kind of interesting to, you know, what happened back in the 70s for you with the Seahawks, which was your local team.
Yeah.
And now this guy with his Texans, it's good for the hobby. However,
absolutely,
we still need some newer collectors getting out there and collecting some of the old stuff at the same time. You know what I mean? So, but we got to take one thing at one time and one situation at one time as far as collecting is concerned. I did find it interesting. He's not alone. A lot of newer collectors prefer Beckett for grading their newer cards. And I don't have a good reason why, other than they've pretty much been brought up by Beckett, you know, with the price guide, the monthly price guide, so on and so forth. So they're comfortable staying with them for grading. So, you know, that could be one theory behind it. I got a feeling that, you know,
they market it well with regards to it. You know what I mean? So just something to keep thinking about. There's hope for the hobby. And as much as what I saw at the National, I had a lot of mixed feelings one way or the other with the National. But there is, you know, I still see, you know, people were collecting, and there is a great demand for newer cards graded. I just can't see the point of breaking open a pack of cards and then just getting graded right away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and Beckett. I mean, and Beckett, the holder does look good. And Beckett does break it down into sides, you know, corners, you know, color, et cetera. So, I mean, it is a good-looking holder. It's just, you know, us collectors have learned that Beckett is where you go. You know, they're a lot more lenient on sheet cut. You know, sheet cut cards, they're a lot more lenient. You know, they're not as good as catching trimmed cards. So, you know, vintage guys tend to mistrust a Beckett holder because of those two things. So we tend to think of, oh, they haven't a Beckett holder or a BVG holder. They must not have been able to get it graded via PSA or SGC, so they went to the third one. They're just looking to get it slabbed. That tends to be the that tends to be the thought process, you know, for vintage.
Yeah. Well, you know, and again, to me, they do look attractive in the Beckett holder. I still like SGC with the black background. I think they're the most attractive as far as looking at the cards, you know. And again, because the only graded cards I own are the Mayos, I don't like the Mayos in PSA. I mean, they just look lousy to me. There's nothing attractive about it. A Mayo card in an SGC holder is much more attractive to me, you know, than that's just me. That's my feelings on it one way or the other. Other people would swear, you know, I just want PSAs for my Mayos and that's it type of thing, you know. So
I couldn't agree more. I love the look of the black SGC holder. It's just, I think most people, most dealers, most, you know, collectors would tell you things are just more valuable in a PSA holder. But, you know, a lot of my old ticket stubs, a lot of my postcards, I send it to SGC because it's my personal collection. It's not going anywhere.
Yep.
I could care less about, you know, the grade or the resale. It's, you know, and it's so thinly traded. It's such a, you know, such an odd item that most people don't care. I'm getting it slabbed to protect it and, you know, to validate it, you know, to authenticate it. So, you know, I'm not concerned. So.
Yeah. So, but I just think it's, you know, the fascination with graded cards is this, you know, we'd be beating a dead horse talking about it for the past few years.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the scandal continuing, the problems continuing, and hopefully they're going to, you know, everything's going to be just brushed under the rug and that's it. It's, you know, it's not going to change my feelings on it. You know what I mean? But I do respect this younger collector, and you know, I try to encourage him. Hey, look at, you know, a lot of other stuff you can collect. And another thing, team photos. You know, team photos are to me so nice to have. They're so collectible. Just a nice collectible from your favorite team type of thing. And they've been overlooked for a long time, to say the least. But anyways, the other thing I want to talk about is we got a new issue of Gridiron Greats coming out over the next few weeks, and we're currently laying it out. I do want to give our listeners a heads up that I really want you to really think about it. If you don't subscribe to Gridiron Greats, if you don't own any copies of Gridiron Greats magazine, there's one copy you're going to want to buy, and it's this upcoming issue. And the reason being, I heard that my co-host is being featured as the super collector in this upcoming issue. And reading and unfortunately having editing a few of your responses, I am looking forward to the layout of the article and the items we're going to be showing in many cases for the first time to the reading collecting public of the Joe Squires collection. And again, you know, the pedigree of your collection is superb. The stuff you own is just amazing. And
I'm humbled to finally be the super collector. Thank you, Bob. And I've been texting Bob things that didn't quite make the cut. And perhaps we'll talk about it in the next show after the Gridiron Greats comes out. But it's kind of fun. I had a hard time whittling it down to six, and there's one little surprise in there, autographed large and card that'll kind of surprise some people that it makes one of my top cards. But the reason behind it is very nostalgic and, you know, et cetera. But, yeah, I had a lot of fun putting that together.
And again, I'm glad to see. I wanted to make sure you had something that represents Largent, because that's such a large part of your collection. And, you know, all kidding aside, you know, he was your childhood hero. You met the man.
Yeah.
You know, how cool can it be? You know, and I always look at that picture of you as a young kid with him. It's just so cool to me to see. And I always wish I had the same thing with Bart Starr, but I never did. And, you know, that's it. You know, it's the way way it happened, and that's it. But in your case, got to meet your hero. You've met him a couple other times where you got autographs. So it's a very, very nice thing to see and to be such a big part of what I feel is probably the best Largent collection in the country. Not so much in volume, but just in the sheer amount of stuff you have of him. And correct me if I'm wrong, you basically have every one of his cards, right? That came out.
Yes, sir. That and $2 will give me a cup of coffee in most places. But, you know, it is fun. It's fun. I've enjoyed it. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way you couldn't enjoy something like that. Again, you know, and you know, the nice part about Largent, he had a nice career. He had a lot of nice stuff produced on him. You know, there's a lot of regional sets out there that you collected. You know, the police set cards, the potato chip cards there, so on and so forth. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff that he came out with.
Yeah. His knowledge cards and that
stuff is neat. That's really nice to see and to collect. So Seahawks, to me, there's a lot of nice regional sets of the Seahawks that can be collected.
Yeah.
So, you know, and anybody collecting them, I mean – I know the early sets are very difficult, but the police sets are relatively easy to find, and a few of the other ones.
There's there's the 1977 Fred Myers set, which is a local grocery store here that, you know, is this came out the same time as his rookie card. I mean, you know, it's a beautiful, cool black bordered set. That's just a regional set. I mean, it's those little regional sets that are really cool. You know, that I've really become to enjoy, you know, the Oro Wheat, but it's been fun. It's kind of become my shtick. I mean, I like making fun of myself about it. Just, you know, a lot of people joke around about me having a restraining order on Steve Largent. You know, it's kind of funny. I've had friends Photoshop, you know, me and Steve Largent into various, you know, riding on a unicorn, you know, stuff like that.
Yep.
It's taken on a mind of its own. It's become really fun, and I'm okay.
And then the other nice thing too is that you were able to see him play live in person. You know, went to many games and the like.
Yeah.
So that's another real nice part of the whole aura of the collection too. You know, you got a lot of personal involvement in the collection. You got a lot of personal memories in the collection, and that's what makes it very, 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 very nice. So, and again, I'm glad you included it. And I know many people will be wanting to get that issue when it comes out, because it's going to be very, very hot collectible. As soon as it comes off the press in a few weeks, I'm sure we'll be inundated. We'll be inundated with people wanting to buy it. All right,
I love it.
At this time, we have our special guest. He just called in. He's well known to our listeners of our podcast, as he's been on several times in the past. He's one of the owners of MSB Sports Cards and BST Auctions. He's a football memorabilia historian. who has an amazing collection of Pittsburgh Steelers items and early NFL items. And I'd like to welcome to our show our good friend, Mr. John Spano. Jack, welcome to the show tonight.
Thanks, Bob. Hey, Joe, what's going on? And those Pittsburgh Steelers items after this season, they may be for sale, so we'll see how that goes. But it's not nothing. It's going to be a long season.
Yeah.
I haven't experienced one of those since the 80s when I was a kid, so it's going to be a long, long season, long, tough haul. We'll see what happens, see how much character they have.
It's interesting how you get used to just that culture of winning. I mean, you know, Bob, you know, take the Packers during the Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers run.
Yep.
I mean, you're just used to a win. You know, you're used to 9 and 10 win seasons. And, you know, when somebody goes down, when somebody gets hurt, you know, take Andrew Luck retiring, Drew Brees, you know, he'll be back. He just hurt his hand, you know, but you just take it just takes a few people to, you know, go down and, you know, yeah, and you're not very far away from being a 6-win team.
Well, you know,
I'm hoping
Packers,
for 6, to be honest with you.
The Packers are a good example. When they lost Rodgers, I mean, they weren't able to do anything. I mean, it's very evident. So that's why I always said for years now, the number 2 quarterback in the NFL needs to be a number 1 quarterback at any second. And that's the way they got to play like. So what it comes down
yep.
to. Well, John, thanks for being on the show tonight. I want to start off by asking you, what are your feelings for the issues we're currently seeing with the problems with graded cards in the hobby, with the shortcuts, the doctoring, so on and so forth? You as a dealer on the other side of the table there, what's going on in your mind with all this stuff?
It adds an extra dimension to doing that because, you know, now where you would just get those things in hand. And, you know, I always would look at cards that would come in, make sure that, you know, obviously the holder wasn't tampered with, and you know, take kind of peek at the card, make sure the card matches what the grade is. But now it's at a new level. I mean, that you have people on one side, the third-party graders, admitting that, you know, their things are slipping by them, and, you know, that opens up questions in itself too. And then, and when you're trying to sell something like that, you know, before it was easy, you know, hey, I have a PSA 8 card, and that's a nice looking card, and here you go, and you know, but now it's like, you know, somebody's gonna get it in hand and question it and trace its, you know, its lineage, and they rightfully so. You pay that kind of money for a card, you expect that, you know, it's gonna be good. And it's unfortunate. You know, even back in the day, Joe, I'm sure you can remember this too, and I know, Bob, you can. I remember going to a show in the 80s, early 80s, and I bought a 1975 Terry Bradshaw card. I still have that card. And it was gorgeous looking, and nobody was worried about condition. There were 2 conditions in the grade book, if you remember back then, very good and mint. This was a mint card. You know, it looked gorgeous, mm-hmm. and I brought it home. And, you know, a 12, 11-year-old kid, I set it next to my other cards. I realized it's trimmed. I'm like, who would do that? I think I paid 50 cents for it, you know. But somebody, instead of 25 cents, they got 50 cents out of it. So as long as there's money to be made, unfortunately, there's going to be people that are going to do these things. And I don't know what the answer is. It's very unfortunate.
And what happens there, John? I mean, let's say somebody consigns a card to you, and then, you know, somebody buys it, and then the person who buys it goes, hey, I just saw this thing on, you know, a forum, and it was submitted by, you know, a known trimmer. It's on a list. I want a refund. I mean, where does the buck stop on that? I mean,
and I don't know. It's become a game of hot potato, hasn't it? And it's kind of scary. It really is. And I'm thankful. If you look at the auction, I mean, we have a decent amount of graded cards, but probably fewer as a function of percentage than we've ever had. You know, most of the stuff is, you know, 101 ephemera, you know, items that are in this auction. So it's kind of breathing a sigh of relief over the last few months as I looked at our offering and said, you know, this is going to be a little bit easier. But even within the last week, I've received some phone calls, people that are concerned about things that are in the auction. And I'm like, you know, I've looked everything over, and all I can give you is my assurance that I'm pretty sure that everything's good, but you're welcome to scrutinize. And I invite that. You have to. So,
The one thing I'll comment on when you're going back to what you were saying, you're picking up that Bradshaw card. Somebody had asked me on one of the boards, well, the board I'm on, that we're all on, about the 48 Leafs. And like I said, when I collected that set back in the 80s, I honestly never saw anything in near mint or mint condition because, you know, we didn't have graded cards back then. Basically, the best grade I saw was VGEX, okay? So how did all of a sudden all these perfect mint cards come to the market is beyond me. You know, and again, that I was there was a lot more shows going on back then, in my opinion. There was a lot more people selling cards. And, you know, just looking for them. Like I said, I found most of my 48 weeks, to be honest with you, in good and less condition, from poor to good. And especially the high
number.
I never saw a high number in mint condition. You know, I own nothing in even... the closest I got in a better condition would be an X, would probably be a 6 at the best. Okay, so how did we get all these 8, 9s and 10s? It's beyond me, you know. So.
Well, we know the answer, unfortunately, and Joe Colabella, who we all know. I had a long conversation with him probably about 15 years ago. I was buying a couple trickles from him. And he told me how many trickles he'd handled over the years. And, you know, it's a number that's almost unbelievable. And, you know, he had a lot of inventory at that time, you know, 10, 15 each card. And he told me that he'd never really seen a trickle card until the advent of grading that he would have considered better than X-Mint. You know, 5s and 6s were the top of the line card. And, you know, the regular card, like you said, was a good, very good card, a handled card, but, you know, not abused. And so that's what he would sell as an excellent card, you know, the old style, you know, the grading scale that they would use. And he said, I have no idea. He goes, I know where they're coming from, you know, but there's no way. There's no way that there's this many of them. So, you know, it's unfortunate, you know, and I think we all have. I wrote the 1949 Leaf article for the last issue. I love that set. I just it's kind of like the redheaded stepchild of the vintage sets. And I just there's not that many of them out there. I've really gone after it and tried to put and been working on it for 25 years. I've got my setup to work at averages about X. I have a couple cards that are a little bit higher. I've looked at them. I think they're good. But you know who am I to say anymore? You don't know if they're getting them past the. To PSA and SGC, then who am I? You know, my eyes aren't even good anymore. So, it's difficult.
Now the problem is, John. I mean, you mentioned your upcoming, you know, auction. I mean, the big problem is somebody gives you a group of high, you know, high end PSA graded cards. You know, 2 years ago, those just went into the auction, and now you're having to scrutinize the people who. Are hired to scrutinize the cards. I mean, it's where we're at right now.
It's an infinite regress. There's multiple levels of scrutiny, and when does it stop? I mean, I guess when you get the card into somebody's hands and they say, I'm okay with it. I guess that's where it has to end, but when does it end? You know, when does somebody wake up one day and they've read enough or they've heard enough and they get to that tipping point, they're like, I'm going to start looking at the cards in my collection, and then they start finding things they don't like. You know, and they're like, oh, okay, you know, this might be trimmed, and then you start, and it's discouraging. And that's what happens, unfortunately. I don't think we're going to see a mass exodus. I don't think the hobby's going to collapse. There's too many people that really enjoy it. But at the same time, I think you're going to see a difference in how people collect. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's maybe not cracking everything out of holders, but it might be, well, you know, I'm not going to go for that registry stuff anymore. I'm not going to get involved in that. I'm just going to collect a set that's appealing to me and appealing to my eyes and just go from there.
Yep.
So,
I think you're absolutely right.
Yep.
Well, let's change gears here to something that's cool, something that's fun, and something all of us love. Your upcoming BST auction. I missed the preview you sent out to me. I'm sorry, my loss. I got your link last night, perused through the auction. It kicks ass, John. It looks good. Tell us about it.
I'm so excited.
Tell us about it.
Super excited. Okay. Well, I mean, the leadoff item is a ball that we received as a consignment about a month and a half ago. It's a game ball, 1919 Army-Navy game. And for what it's worth, and I did a lot of research on the ball and the game itself, the game is ranked number 6 all-time in the Army-Navy contests. For whatever reason, it wasn't the greatest game. It was 6-0 and Navy won. But it was quite a game because it was celebrating the return to somewhat normalcy after World War I. The two teams hadn't played for 2 years. You had all the who's who's there. Pershing, I think, came out, and I don't know if he did the coin toss, but he did some opening ceremonies. And then you had two field goals, and that won the game. But we have the ball from that game. We have the ball that is etched in the leather, you know, whatever they did,
wow,
in this type of burning implement, after the first field goal was kicked. And provenance coming from a gentleman who was not only a player for Navy in the 1900s, I think he played in 1906 to 1909, named Richardson. He was a coach on the team. He also was a lieutenant commander as well. So they gave him the ball for whatever reason, and he had it in his collection, and it was with him for years, and then it's only changed hands twice since then. So it is quite a piece, and probably one of the more significant game balls I've ever seen offered. And we're very excited to have it and looking forward to that. So that's a leadoff piece. And there's a lot of good stuff after that too, obviously, which you guys have seen. I think I mentioned to you, Joe, when we were texting today, there's 50 items in the auction that are Red Grange items. So, I mean, I hate to call him the Babe Ruth of football, but, you know, he is. So, you know, and there's 50 items that pertain to him.
Yeah, it looked good, John. I really enjoyed perusing through. You've, like you mentioned, you know, some really good uncut sheets. I saw a 69 tops uncut sheet, which is so stunning when you see all the cards put together and so colorful. 61 Fleer second series, 81, 82, 84. You had a 1977 tops. I didn't get a chance to see if my man Largent was in there. Is that the T-Series one?
I am pretty sure it is. In fact, I have the auction open in front of me here on my computer, and I can take a peek real quick as I answer some other questions. We have the thing that I'm most impressed with, and this is just me because this is the direction my collecting's going right now, is we have original artwork from Bowman and Tops. Just incredible
yeah.
stuff. 19, and they're all the Bowman cards, the five of them that are in the auction, they're all unissued pieces. They're unissued artwork. They never made the cards for them. Unissued.
Unissued cards. I saw that. That was incredible. That is so cool. You know? Yeah, I love the Bowman set. I love the Bowman set. I picked up a couple of your uncut 1950 Bowman sheets in your last auction that were framed. I love them. They hang in my office. They look stunning.
Yeah, and one thing that I'm really pleased about with this auction that, you know, not that we got away from it, but, you know, I was going to lower lot numbers or lower numbers of lots and bigger lots. This auction ranges from opening bids of $50 all the way up to $10,000. So there's really something. If you want something collectible and it's the $50 items are still neat items, they're just the $50 items to start,
yeah.
You know. So it's going to give everybody an opportunity to add. And again, a lot of this comes from the Mike's collections, Mr. Blaisdell,
yeah.
Mr. Moran. So, you know, you know
yep.
these were well thought of items when they were put into the collection. So,
without a doubt.
Really neat stuff.
Without a doubt. This show's called Gridiron
Greats,
not basketball court greats, but I also noticed you had a couple of, you know, nice uncut basketball sheets and stuff, too. Just a really good swath of sports. I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, we have a ton of baseball in this auction, too, and basketball. A lot of basketball items. And again, not getting away from football. But if there's pretty much a full range of basketball offered all the way from the 48 Bowman set up until the late 70s. Most of the sets are there. There's a few things, you know, missing, but there's pretty much a full run.
Yeah.
Wow. Unbelievable. Truly unbelievable. That's some great stuff, man.
We're like I said, super excited, and again, ranging from the 1870s all the way up until the 1980s. So again, something pretty much for everybody.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like asking who your favorite child is. Every auction is different, but I mean, there's got to be some things when you get them, when somebody approaches you at a national, when somebody calls you or emails you about an item, your heart just races a little bit more, where you're just like, oh my. I mean, and you've been a collector longer than I have. I mean, what's something in this auction that you're kind of like, that's pretty damn cool?
The Cornell piece. I don't know if you saw that. I think it's the second item in the auction. It's a 1891, I believe, Cornell piece, or 1892
yeah.
Cornell piece, with Win Osgood, who, if anybody wants to do the research, was quite the athlete. There's a cabinet out there of him that shows him carrying the ball almost in a Heisman pose. And I missed this on eBay. It was years ago, probably close to 20 years ago. And he had his sleeve cut off, because he was such a specimen in the 1890s. I mean, he had his sleeve cut off, holding the ball and flexing. He was a monstrous arm. He was a gymnast. He was just an all-around athlete and a great football player. He was killed in the Spanish-American War. So he has a following. I mean, again, you have to do your research and know your football history, but he's sitting in the front row, and then you have Pop Warner sitting in the second row in his first year as a freshman for Cornell. So they're both in the picture. Possibly the earliest piece of Warner in a football uniform. So
I'll check that out.
Say that
Thank
for
you.
Sure. Yeah, that's lot number two, I believe. I just found your sheet. Yes, there are 277 sheets. Lot 438 has the largest rookie on it. So just so you can mark your pages.
You just made my heart go pitter-patter, John.
You were asking about pieces that I like. And I wanted to let you know one that you'd like to. Yeah, I mean, there's so many things. But that when I saw that, that was hand-delivered to me actually at my house by a person who's somewhat local. He brought it to the house, showed it to me, and I'm like, you want to consign this? Well, I really want to sell it. And I'm like, well, you know, let's talk about what that means and what kind of exposure I can give you. So I'm hoping good things with that Cornell piece. And again, as we talk about what's going on in the hobby, not that I'm trying to dissuade people from buying cards, because I still love cards too, but you want to grab onto something that is almost unique, and that this is unique, obviously. But you know, some of these older pieces, you can't find other ones. You're not going to find this again, and they're not going to come up again. So, original artwork, those type of things.
You're absolutely right. You and John you and Andy have single-handedly changed me from being, you know, kind of a set collector to more, you know, of an esoteric, rare, you know, agnostic to the, you know, to the condition kind of collector, you know, just one of a kind stuff, photos, tickets, program. I mean, you know, I remember where I was, when Andy called me and we were talking about the Pottsville Maroons postcards, and he was like, Joe, you want to jump on these, you know, trust me, you want to jump on these, you know, and I just, it's kind of cool.
It is.
You know, that's,
and I remember where I was when I talked to you about those too. I was sitting at a softball game, standing on the fence when you called me. So yeah, it's funny how you remember those things.
You know, again, it's an overlooked part of our hobby. There's so many other things you can collect other than just cards. You know, sometimes you really just got to take a step back and say, okay, I want postcards, I want team photos, I want the program and ticket stubs and the like, and you know. A lot of it's rarer than rare, and you know, it's a great part of anybody's collection once you start picking them up. So that's very, very true.
Yep.
And that's what I hope people do in this auction too, Bob. Is you know, when they get a chance to take a look at it. I know everybody's very busy. Hopefully, catalogs are going to be here by the end of the week. I can't predict what the USPS does, but you try to time it out so they arrive just as biddings are getting started. You don't want it coming too much earlier, but you know, that's what we tried to do. So I'm hoping they're going to start landing in mailboxes here pretty soon. And you know, you want people to enjoy the auction and go through it and say, hey, this is a catalog I'm going to save for reference, because there's some stuff I might not ever see again, or you know, I want to have an idea, you know, what some of the stuff looks like. And I'm looking for some other items right now too. We have ticket stub that was at New York Giants Stadium, first stub, or from their first home game, 1925. Pick that up. It's a great piece. And then we have a Frankfurt Yellow Jackets 1927 season ticket book with two tickets still left inside of it. Which, again, you know, you talk about things you're not going to see again. They don't come up. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
those are definitely one of ones, to say the least. So. And they should be.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's going to be a lot of interest in them. At the same time.
I hope so. I really do. And again, you know, I obviously am trying to pump the auction here, but, you know, you look at some of these things, and like you said, Joe, you know, what are the things that excite you as much as you've seen? And it's even some of the stuff that I go through that might not seem that exciting, but I'm holding items in, like, the post-serial boxes. There's a whole slew of it. I know there's a bunch of 60s collectors out there. It seems to be becoming a hot area. And it's just these unfolded boxes. You know, where did they come from?
Yeah.
You know, who saved them? You know,
and
you want to kind of trace that backwards and think in your mind. I'm like, you know, you run backwards on the timeline, and you're like, where's this thing been for the last 50 some years? How did it end up in this shape? How's it flattened out? Why did it never get open? Was it, you know, was it in a file folder somewhere? You know, so somebody could use it as reference for the company. Or to, you know, somebody bring it home from, you know, work, you know, hey, my kid might like this, and, you know, I work at Post Serial, but I'm not going to fold it up. I'm just going to bring one of these empty boxes home, and somebody saved it, put it, you know, somewhere, and it lasted all these years. And you still wonder, and it's just really neat to see these things. And if you're a collector and you've spent the last 20 years, 30 years, or when you were a kid putting these sets together, and now you have a chance to add a companion piece like that. Like, wow, you know, that kind of puts the icing on the cake for your collection when you do those type of things. So.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Now,
good point.
When's the auction actually opening, Jen? I know it's in a few days.
Well, it's scheduled to open in the evening this Friday. What is that, the 27th? Yeah, it's the 27th.
Okay.
And I will probably open it a little early. Probably open it a few hours early that day, just depending on what my schedule looks like. But I always like to give some people a heads up and a head start and just generate a little bit of excitement. So, you know, go in and place those bids a bit early and often. So,
That's got to feel kind of good to press the button and start your own auction off. I like that.
It's almost addictive, Joe, because you start rolling through, because I have some screens that I can watch the auction, and, you know, you hit refresh, and you see how many bids have been placed in the last 5 minutes, and you see people getting involved, and it's a neat feeling. It really is. It's kind of cool. It's one of the things I enjoy the most.
And when's the auction close?
It's going to close on the 20th, which is a Sunday, 20th of October. And we're going to do the same thing that we did in the past, where we're going to close it at 5 in the afternoon Eastern, and then we'll let it roll probably until 11 or 12 or so. It won't stay open later than 12, but it will not be a hard close at 12. I'm going to say that now for the people who are listening, and I'll make sure to put out some emails with it too, because I had some people that were planning snipe bids at 11:59:59 last time, and I think I closed it at like 11:55 last time. I'm not going to play those games, and I'm not. I don't have anybody in queue on phones. You know, what time you close it? Let me know. I don't answer phone calls typically after 11:45. But since we've been doing this, if you haven't placed your bid by that time, then you're risking not getting what you want. That's all I could say. So,
I'm curious. An auction like this.
Go for it, John.
I don't know why you would want a sniper for it. I mean, bid what you think your maximum is, put it in, and let it go. That's it.
I don't know
why that's so difficult.
We've all been involved with message boards, and we've seen the manifestos that have been written about, you know, bidding strategies and everything else. And I always get in, and I say it, and I probably really throw a wet blanket on things, but I said I know what I want to bid. I'm not going to bid that on the first day, but usually by the last day, I'll put in the bid I want. If it holds, it holds. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. And that's why I've maintained that. Yeah. Have I had bidders remorse where I haven't bid enough? Yeah, of course I have. But at the same time, you know, when you look back on it, is it really that big of a deal? It's not. It's not. We're collecting. Yep. It's supposed to be fun. So you figure out if you want to spend $200 on something, put in my $200 bid, regardless of where the bid is. I have faith in the system, and not going to worry about it. If there's somebody doing something nefarious behind the scenes, and I don't know, somebody will go pay the piper down the line somewhere else, I guess. That's all. I'll bid what I'm willing to bid and be done with it. So that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Yeah.
John, wow. How do you and Andy handle closing night of an auction? Do you guys come together, like one of you guys go to each other's place and just hang out and talk about it, or you on speakerphone? What's the dynamic? The relationship between you two guys on closing night?
It's speakerphone, and it can get hairy sometimes. We've never actually come together on auction night, just because we're far enough away from each other that it just doesn't make sense. So I pretty much run operations around the year here in Ohio, and then everything gets shipped out there and warehoused once it's ready to go, and then Andy will man the ship that last day with me on call, and there's some funny stories that can be told, some that I can't share here, and some that I can. Most notably, the last auction, if you remember, I don't know if both of you remember, the auction just mysteriously closed an hour after it opened, or an hour after extended bidding, about 6 o'clock. Last time, a year ago, just closed. And we talked to our software people, and they're like, "Well, just let it close." I'm like, okay, that'll work out really well. Can you come to court with us when that happens? So I sent out a quick message and said, "Hey, listen, we had some malfunctions," which was the first time, knock on wood, that had happened in 9 auctions, anything like that. And it had been pretty much totally smooth sailing, and then we just opened it back up, and everything kind of righted, and then it ended, went till the end of the auction. So it's just very interesting that happened. Like some gremlins in the work, they found a way to screw up the machinery. That was a panicky 5 minutes between myself and Andy and the people we needed to call to get that all set up again, especially when their first response was, "I just let it close." Quite close. No big deal.
I missed that. Interesting.
John.
But yeah, it's interesting.
To put you on the spot just a bit here. What do you actually feel deep down inside? What you think might be a growth area for the football card and memorabilia hobby in the future, short term and long term, if anything?
Short term, I think that's the hot potato market. Short term, for me, what I'm seeing, and it's blown my mind the last few auctions, although we don't really have anything like it this auction, are the autograph rookie cards. I mean, they just blow up. But to me, and again, you collect whatever you want to. But to me, I see a lot of gambling going on. A Patrick Mahomes card selling for tens of thousands of dollars. And then you have an autographed Barry Sanders card that'll sell for a couple hundred or maybe less. It's a strange game, and it's a speculative game in that regard. I see that as being a short term thing, and I think I don't know how that's going to right the ship. I don't know, especially some of these autographs come out as being auto penned or not real or not witnessed or whatever. How's that gonna? I don't know. It's a difficult thing. So, as Andy has said before, once they retire, you might as well just get rid of it, because it's only hot while they're still playing. It's a very interesting thing, because you have players that are legends in the game, and you have autographs. And for instance, we have a Jim Thorpe autograph in this auction. I don't know what it's going to sell for, but I tell you it's not going to sell for as much as a Patrick Mahomes autograph is going to sell for. It's ridiculous. It doesn't make sense. There's no logic behind it, but it is what it is, and that's the way the market's working right now. That's where the supply or where the demand is. That's short term. Long term, I think that as the hobby matures, I think you're going to see people, and I've said this before, you're going to get into more of the one-on-one pieces, the rare pieces. And again, condition aside, like you said, Joe, and you have to kind of let go of that. I've had people walk up to me and say, "Well, I don't like that. It's bent." I'm like, "I've never seen another one." "Well, it's got a big crease to it." "Well, it's the only one I've ever seen." You say it over and over again, but people are really hung up on condition, and that's fine. But you also have to understand what you're looking at. If somebody offered you the Mona Lisa, and there was some cracking in the paint, you're like, "Well, wait for another one to come up." It's not going to happen. So, and I think long-term, I think a lot of people are going to try to define their collections that way, at least, experienced collectors, maybe not experienced collectors, maybe somebody getting in and doesn't have the the preconceived notions of what the hobby's all about and say, well, this doesn't make sense. Why should I collect something there's thousands of and they put them in plastic slabs and I can buy this and there's only one of them? So I see that where it's going. And there's enough one-on-one things that people can focus on their collections. I don't know. I think cards will always be king, though. I really do. It's what started us all doing this, so.
I was really expecting, the NFL to do better with their 100-year, anniversary coming up. And I was commenting about that to somebody, watching Monday Night Football game. I'm like, man, you're barely seeing anything from the NFL about 100 years. There's a movie about Jim Thorpe's life coming out. I mean, you see little bumps in those things when somebody shines a light on it. I mean, I don't know, and I'm not seeing a lot of that. It's not being handled very well by the powers that be, I guess.
And what's selling tickets nowadays, I guess, is the question. My father and I just had this conversation. What's selling tickets is Antonio Brown, and he's not even playing football. What's selling tickets and generating interest in the league are the drama stories. And this has been my biggest complaint about the sport for the last 10 years is that we get wrapped up in the personal lives and the things that some of these guys do, good or bad. And the good stuff's great. I can listen to those stories till the end of the day, but I get really turned off when I have to, they break into – I was watching Army in Michigan a few weekends ago, and they broke in that Antonio Brown had been released by the Raiders. I'm like, I want to watch football.
Yeah.
I don't care anymore. I really don't. I'm sitting down and watching a good college football game, and that's what's turned me off a lot from the sport in general.
Yeah.
As far as the 100-year stuff go, I don't think it sells tickets. I don't think people care outside of our small groups about that history as much. And I am pleased. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, the seniors committee gets to pick 10 guys this year. Is that true for the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Okay. So
I'm
pretty certain, and if I'm wrong on that, I apologize for even saying it, but I'm pretty sure that's what I heard, that there's going to be 20 inductees this year. You're going to have your five and then some contributors for the other five. And then I think they're going to be the seniors committee gets to pick 10. And if I'm wrong about that, I apologize. Pretty sure that's what I read somewhere. I'd be interested to see who they pick this year. I'd love to see them go back and get a Tony Latone and a Tarzan Christensen and a Wisp. He should be in regardless if there's 10 or 2 picks. It's ridiculous if he's not in. A Matt Speedy, a Lavi Dilwig, a Cecil Isbell. I mean, these are the kind of guys that have been kind of overlooked. I'm trying to think who else I just sold. Card of Reese, Ox Emerson, matchbook. Guy was all pro for 7 years in a row, made the all 1930s all decade team as a guard. Doesn't even get sniffed. Played for the Lions. So, I mean, why not? Why, what are we doing here? I mean, we have the resources available, we have the people doing the research. Go and get these guys, and even though they're not around anymore, unfortunately, at least get their families involved, or at least give them the recognition they deserve after all this time. So,
yeah, I agree.
Harder to be a pro football player back then than it was now. I mean, now it's money. Back then it was you're getting beat up, and you got to go to work on Monday.
Got to go to work on Monday and hope you can make ends meet. A lot of those guys didn't make much more money both playing football and working a day job than Joe Blow did back then, so.
Speaking of, we've been, the three of us, when we get together, we can just talk hobby forever. But we've been talking about a lot of vintage, a lot of football history. We always like to kind of wrap up, do you have any advice for beginning collectors? I mean, you run an auction house, you see modern, you see vintage. I mean, and you and I are talking about vintage and what's coming, what's going. So, I mean, what advice would you get to somebody who opens up your catalog for the first time, who's wanting to get into collecting?
You want deep philosophical, or do you want light and easy? I can give you both answers. Light and easy.
I know what you went to college for. I know what you went to college for, John. So I know you want to wax philosophy here.
I'll do it light and easy first. Just make sure it's something you want to do. Don't let anybody else drive you one direction or another. Find something that interests you, and don't be afraid not to define your collection, I guess is the best way to put it. Because I look at what I have now and I'm like, my gosh, it put me in an insane asylum for some of the things that I've put in my collection over the years, but I've enjoyed every piece that I've put in my collection. So I've never let myself be defined by any parameters or anything like that. And make sure the deeper philosophical side, make sure it's fun. One of the unfortunate side effects that I see, you know, with some collectors and some people that I've dealt with in the past and presently, is that they allow themselves to be defined by their collecting, and it's not about collecting. It's more driven by, I don't know, ego maybe. I don't know. It's I get it. We're all competitive, and it's fun sometimes to grab that card in an auction, especially. And that's what I want people to do. I want them to compete a little bit. It's nothing. Not anything worth getting angry about, that's for sure. So, yeah, enjoy it.
Good point.
Be happy for other people. And the fact that we can have these kind of conversations, both, you know, on message boards and in person, and people share the interest that you do, and for everybody's collection is the best collection. So, if you enjoy what you're doing, then that's what it comes down to. So.
Very well.
I appreciate you being on again, and good luck with the auction. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people bidding and a lot of interest. It's just looking at some of the stuff is just incredible. So I truly appreciate it, and I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule and coming on and talking tonight. Thanks again.
Hey, no problem. Thanks, guys. I really enjoy talking to you, too, and appreciate all your support. I really do. Enjoy the auction.
Always a pleasure, John.
Thanks.
Take care, guys. Talk to you soon.
John Spano, BST Auctions, upcoming auction. If you're not registered for that auction, check out their website, bstauctions.com, and sign up for the auction and start bidding on Friday of this week. And it's going to be very interesting. You know, one thing, we don't have much time, but one thing I do point out, I save a lot of auction catalogs that I receive. I don't get them all, but I do get some. And I got to say, John's auction catalog definitely, by far and wide, has so much information. I mean, so historical in nature. It's just such a great reference tool to go back and look at. You know what I mean? And I still go back to the first auction, and I still look at a few things in it. Just amazing to read and amazing to see.
Totally. No, it's interesting. There was something in his auction. It was like a, 1911 Illinois team set or something like that. And I forget what it was, but it was a team set. And it was unmarked.
Yeah.
And I click on it to read the description. And it's like, hey, we don't know much about this. We tried looking. We do this. We do it. Written on the back in light pencil is this. But, hey, we tried. We can't find much more. And I actually smiled at that, and I really enjoyed that because I know John and Andy both love looking stuff up. They love the history of it. They're both, history aficionados when it comes to our hobby, And it just kind of cracked me up. John would just put that in there in the description. It's like, hey, man, if you want a mystery, if you want to solve something, find out who this is. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree 100%. They've gone by far and wide above and beyond to try to educate the collector in their auctions for what they have. And again, the historical stuff there is just truly amazing to me, to say the least. So I look forward to the auction. Our two-minute warning, I'm going to hand off to you, Joe, real quick. What'd you learn on tonight's show?
I really liked I finished my Spotlight Collector, article to you last night.
Mm-hmm.
And, my advice to the hobbyist, hearing what John talked about, I kind of echoed what I said. It's be good, be nice, be respectful to other people's collections. When there's money and ego involved, you got to put that aside sometimes. And I really liked hearing that because there's a tight group of us football collectors. There's about 20 of us, and we all get along. We all know each other's sense of humor and the nuances.
Yeah.
We all know what each other collect, et cetera. And it's good to hear that.
I agree 100%. It's a nice hobby, and it should really be viewed as a hobby, you know, for the future, for it to continue and keep the history of the game alive. All right, we're down to 30 seconds. Again, if you don't subscribe to Gridiron Greats Magazine, you're going to be missing out.
What the hell are you thinking?
Upcoming. GridironGreatsMagazine.com. Check it out for subscription information. Joe, we're out of time. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back later. Actually, we'll be back hopefully later this week with another show, and we'll keep you posted on that. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.